I'm Tamara.
I'm Rel.
And this is Fearful.
No, it's not. It's Fearful Friends Podcast.
Okay.
Oh my God. Positions have been reversed. Day is night. Up is down. Black is white. Left is right.
Okay. Oh, my Amazon delivery just got delivered.
So proud of you.
Yeah.
What'd you get?
I got
something
so,
silly, I'm sure.
No, I got so much. Well, I got like 10 things. Remember last week or whenever, I don't know when this episode's going to be released.
4 weeks from now, because we have four episodes backlogged.
But I was talking about how I couldn't find any, like, just normal clothes.
Yes, I do remember
so that. So I did go on a hunt for normal shirts, just like tops.
Okay. How'd that hunt go? You ordered them on Amazon?
I did.
Ugh.
I got...
I've never had good luck ordering clothes on Amazon.
I...
Specifically shirts.
Yeah, I know. I think I got like 5 shirts. I got those sunglasses I showed you. I haven't tried them on. They came right when I was coming home. So I just opened it and grabbed
my sunglasses. I saw the
sunglasses. And I got 2 pairs of jean shorts. I got cushion covers for my new couch.
You know what you should do if you ever need shorts? Where did I get mine? I went to the outlet mall in Vero.
Maybe, that's still maybe alive?
Yeah. And, wow, I lost my train of thought.
Shorts. Vero.
What the fuck is a store called? Levi? Maybe? I think it was a Levi store. Anyways, I went in the fall. Didn't even realize that apparently, like, in Florida, they have like seasonal sales. So they had marked down all their summer stuff. Mm-hmm. All their shorts were on sale. So I got 2 pairs of shorts that actually fit me for $11 each.
Wow.
Jean shorts.
Wow.
I don't wear them a lot, but.
I have my favorite pair of jean shorts, but growing out of them. You know, I'm a growing boy.
I'm big boy. That's not what Pinocchio says. What does he say?
Pinocchio, I'm a real boy.
Oh. Sorry.
But I am a big boy.
Who needs fucking shorts that fit you anyway?
Me. It's hot.
So wear what you're wearing. Those look nice.
Yes, they are nice shorts. You're right.
Are those the ones you ordered?
No.
No. You ordered jean shorts.
These are...
You literally just said it and I already forgot.
Running shorts. You have the same
pair. I actually have purple ones, but yeah. I don't wear them very often.
I have the same purple ones. I gave them to you. We could match. We could go out on like a date together.
They make me feel like a mom.
In our athletic shorts.
I've tried to mow the lawn in them. They just make my legs look so stick-like because they're like, you know, they have the outer part,
mm-hmm.
which is like flowy and moves in the breeze and stuff. And then they have like the inner part, which is, you know, like this... Stuck to your leg.
The spandex.
Yes. And I have really small legs and a really small butt. And then, so you see like the big flowy part and then my tiny little toothpick legs.
I had the opposite problem.
I wish I had. It was like, I wish I had the opposite problem. I would fit into a lot of clothes better.
What?
I would fit into a lot of clothes better.
Oh, okay.
If I only had a butt.
If I only had a butt.
It's my New Year's resolution.
Really? How are you going to do that?
Oh, God. It means I...
Dr.
You know
Miami?
No, if I was ever going to get a butt, I would have already had a butt. Because the amount of squats that I do every day at work, like, it's just not in the cards for me.
Listen.
My body's genetically unable to...
You could buy a butt.
Cushion.
Fat transfer.
I could
transfer some belly. Of my butt to
no,
yours.
You keep your butt. Okay. I like your butt. I would move my belly to my butt. Although, have you ever watched Botched on Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I would ever go under plastic surgery.
Oh, I would.
That
I
is
would
scary stuff.
Definitely get my tits lifted.
Have you seen some of those boobies though? Like, they really get botched.
Yeah, because
some
they...
of them are like, one nipple's up here, one nipple's over there, and it's just unnatural.
Because yeah, they go to, like, Mexico to get discounted.
Some of them are like, what was the one? Janice Dickens or whatever? Mm-hmm. The model? Yeah. She was one of the ones on there, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, but I think that they go crazy and they try to like overdo
people go
it.
Too fucking crazy.
I just and,
like
want...
these doctors have to like force people away because they're like, listen, there's no yeah. more skin I can take off of your nose to fix this. you've had 7 nose jobs, yeah. Michael Jackson.
I just want to, you know, wear a shirt without a bra once in a while and not feel embarrassed.
God, that would be nice. I have this coworker and she's teeny tiny itty bitty and I'm always just like complaining about how my bra is like sticking me in the sides. I can never find a good bra where the wire is not just fucking popping out and sticking me. And she goes, I don't have that problem. I don't have to wear a bra to work. I'm like, I'm gonna
I
fucking
said,
smack you.
You should.
Fucking 21-year-old little bee.
You hoe. You're going down until you can behave.
Just always barking for no reason.
Dogs bark. Except mine.
I hate you.
My dog never barks. Well, it's not very helpful when I'm, like, you know, my landlord and a random plumber walk in and she's just like, hey, this is my belly.
Hi guys, welcome to our home. Yeah.
So, my new car,
mm-hmm.
the vanity plate on the front.
Oh, help we're back me. On this. I do not believe in vanity plates.
I don't either, and I didn't realize till I bought the car. It has that like blank spot that's specifically for a vanity plate.
You know what you could just do? Just put a nice picture on there or something.
Of you?
Or... like a nice sunset.
Oh, F that. That is so ugh.
Oh, so putting a vanity plate on there that says, I'm not like the other moms. I'm a cool mom.
No, see, you didn't get it. It says, I'm not a cool mom. I'm a regular mom.
I hate you. Lame.
It's not lame because it's funny.
Did you watch the new Mean Girls movie?
No, did you?
No, I won't. I refuse. How dare they try to... ruin a classic. Sorry, Lulu. I didn't mean to scare you.
Yeah.
I'm not behind you on the vanity plate thing.
But it looks dumb with like this thing.
Doesn't.
It's like a
it
plastic
UK like black no. van.
Because you've only seen it at night. It's like this big plastic square thing in the front of my van and I
take it off then.
I can't. It's like part of the van.
You can't unscrew the plate hold
no.
thing.
Because it's like a holder that you put the screws into.
Ugh. Okay, well, if you must. I don't know. I think you just need to think about this. Like, do you have a favorite band? A favorite artist? A favorite something that you could get like a plate made?
No. I did name my van Trashily, so I could... I was just going to get, just says trash can on the front.
That's a good vanity plate.
You like trash can?
I love trash can. Okay. I also love Trashily.
Yes.
That's my favorite thing ever.
Yeah. Because if you're going to drive my child around, it's just going to turn into a trash can.
Yeah. I already see things starting to be piled on the passenger seat.
I have 2 little trash cans in there already.
Why? You just keep trash cans in your car? That's how you get ants.
They're like the little ones to put like your straw in and like receipts.
Mm. You're not eating in that car.
Chewed up. Oh, hell yeah. I eat in that car.
God. Don't be like me. Don't get buggies in your car.
I
don't even eat in my car and I have bugs in my car.
I was deep cleaning my car on Tuesday and guess what I saw in it?
A roach.
A spider.
Oh, I killed the giantest? The biggest spider in my living room this morning.
Oh my God, why would you tell me that?
To say that we're on the same level.
I know, but
we
I'm
both
in
have
your
our
house
spider
right
issues.
Now.
Okay, I was just in your van.
I really hate spiders.
Did you get the spider?
No, and I had a bottle of spray.
Was it still alive?
Yeah. I had a bottle of spray.
Okay, I at least killed my spider. I left yours alive.
Hopefully I drowned him. But he was stuck in between the center console and the seat in like that like forever gone black hole. And I had spray.
What kind of spider?
I don't know.
Was it like a big muscular one?
God, I'm all itchy now. I really hate spiders.
Well, it's your fault for noticing. I've stopped turning the lights on in my car when I get into it because I'm like, I don't want to see what's in there. I just want to get home safely.
Yeah. Ugh. Let's move on.
Okay. Are you ready for my story? Or do you want to chit-chat some more?
I feel like I had something else to tell you.
Well, we have Vanity Plate.
Oh.
We talked about what you got.
Listen what I did this week. So last weekend, I had to go to the fair. And I say, yes, I had to go to the fair. Because Rich's family was taking M. And I was like, well, I don't trust any other humans with my child. Right. So I have to go. Whatever. So that took the whole day Saturday. And then on Sunday, we had like a Girl Scout thing in the morning. And then when I came home, I was so exhausted. I felt like I was getting sick. So the whole weekend was just gone. I didn't get to get any of the stuff done I needed to get done. Monday, I go to work. And all I can think about is like how disgusting my house was. To the point where like my heart palpitations were coming back. Because it just felt very overwhelmed.
Like
nothing was ready. I had to get M ready for karate. Oh, and on top of that, Monday, she stayed home from school because she decided to throw up in the middle of the night. On me.
So, on you?
Yeah, Sunday night. So she stayed home from school. I had all this laundry. It was just a mess. My house was a fucking mess. So I called out of work on Tuesday. Said, yeah, now I'm throwing up.
I'm proud of you.
I had to call out of work to clean my house. That's crazy. Like, I don't understand how people have a normal life and work 40 hours and then take care of you. Like,
I don't know. And then there's like people that fucking work 40 hours and another job on top of it. Like, I don't know how people do it. Yeah.
And then I was listening to, I think it was Wine and Crime podcast on Tuesday, the day I called out, like in the evening. And I was still contemplating. I'm like, I still have a lot of stuff to do.
You're going to call out Wednesday.
Yeah. They were talking about how I think maybe it was Ladies and Tangents that I was listening to. They were talking about how employers disrespect your PTO and, you know, how it's not specifically like your boss, but like the company as a whole sets you up for failure. And so I was like, yeah, that's my time. Yeah. And you know what? The last 2 years, I've not used all of my sick time and we don't get paid. We just lose it.
Oh, you can't like literally have it paid out to put on your paycheck?
No.
Oh, fuck. Take and, like, those sick days.
A lot. Like 20 hours each year. Like that's a lot of time that I earned and it's my time. Mm-hmm. So I was like, fuck it.
That's what it's there for.
Texted my boss. Still really sick. Sorry.
Damn. So you called out Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yep.
I'm so proud of you.
Yeah. Thank you.
I wish I could fucking do that. I mean, I could, but then I come home, I come back to work like a huge fucking mess.
And I did, but.
Worth it, though? Did you get everything done?
No, but I did get a lot done. Yeah. My bedroom's still a mess.
It would be nice to, like, be able to work, like, 4 10-hour days and have 3 days off. Ugh. Like, and like 2 of those days off could be like in a row so that it would feel like I'm having like a little mini vacation.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be so amazing. Because like with my days off, you know, it's the exact same days that I was off when I worked at Winn-Dixie. That has not changed. But it's just like, you know, separated by 3 days each. And I'm just like, it just goes by so fast.
Yeah, and that's what Rich does. He takes off
clean laundry, appointments, you know, whatever other fucking projects that you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks.
Yeah, Rich takes off Monday and Friday, and that's the easiest, so he's able to pick up M from school at least 2 days a week. We don't have to ask someone else to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We really need to work on, like, not feeling guilty for wanting to relax.
Yeah, and it's difficult, though, because when you do relax and then you get behind on stuff,
then you're kicking yourself in the fucking ass.
Yeah, that's stressful and overwhelming when you're like, you know. I know. Like, for me, it's like, well, I didn't make sure that I have all the stuff for her lunches this week, and all of her school clothes are dirty, and she has to wear a freaking uniform, and we've got karate tomorrow, and I don't know where her karate outfit is, and why don't you have any socks? I've bought you so many socks. Where are they all? Why does the dog smell so bad?
Needs a bath, probably.
Yeah. Does anyone else have these issues?
I'm sure like a million people in the world do. That's maybe why more than a million people.
That's why I was telling you. I was like, wouldn't it be nice if I just got injured and I wasn't responsible for anything? For just I could just take that mental load off.
Meanwhile, I'm just like, you do not want to put that into the universe, Tamara. You just don't.
Well, it's like with my foot doctor.
You better fucking knock on that wood curio cabinet right behind you.
Quietly, though. Lightly, so yeah. Your dogs don't lose it.
She's currently licking my foot right now.
Mm. No, my foot doctor, you know, I have some major issues with my feet. And he's like,
she got bunions.
I do. And he's like, well, you know, surgery is our like last option. We're going to exhaust all other options. And I'm like,
love that.
No.
Oh.
I'm like, can you just put me out of work for 8 weeks?
That would be nice. Like my mom, when she had her surgery, she was out for 3 months. 3 months paid.
Yeah, paid.
That would be. And she was so bored. She was so excited to get back to work. And I'm just like,
F that. Are you kidding me? Hell no.
Are you kidding?
No.
I would never be bored. Even if I didn't leave my house every single day, I would never get bored.
Yeah.
I don't want to fucking leave this fortress. Because everyone outside of this fortress is terrible.
I would love that. And if I have to have both of my feet operated on, I can't walk. Stop. I can't clean the house. If I do need to go somewhere, my husband has to push me around in a wheelchair.
He's not going to do that. He's going to be like, well, there's nothing wrong with your arms.
Do a handstand, Tamara. Lazy.
Wheelchair. Just roll. Rolling, 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 rolling.
But, yeah. I think that's depression. So, maybe it's not depression. It's burnout.
It's definitely burnout.
When I think that I want to have a surgery instead of go to work.
Yeah. Or borderline be disabled. So that no one can rely on you for anything. Yeah, that's burnout.
Okay. Well.
I feel ya.
I also walked into work today and my boss was like, hey, did you, have you had a chance to open up your calendar? And I'm like, no, which is something I'm really bad about doing. Mm-hmm. Because they put like meetings on my calendar.
I hate that shit.
And then they cancel them and they add them somewhere else and they cancel them and I just give up. And I was like, no. She's like, oh, okay, well, you have a meeting with HR at 1 o'clock. And I'm like, what?
Is everything okay?
I was like, what? And I had heard through the grapevine one of my other coworkers had also had a meeting with HR when I was out sick. So I went up to him and I was like, what is this all about? And he tells me. So I guess there was one day where I was alone on the teller line. And we were kind of busy, and he came back there, and I was helping a customer in the lobby, and then there was a customer in the drive-thru. So he greeted that customer in the drive-thru, and it was a simple deposit, and he ran their deposit. And I was helping the customer in the lobby, really wasn't paying attention, which is like a big no-no, but also like, fuck your stupid rules. We're going to help the clients because
yeah.
Why make a client wait when, I mean, he was a teller for years.
Yeah.
So it was not a cash transaction, whatever, you know. You do what you feel is right in the spur of the moment for the client when you want to break rules. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I get on and she starts telling me all about this and like making me watch some video. And I'm like, this is what this was about. Oh my God.
I need to watch and an HR
she's
video.
She's like, well, I just want to know why he would do that. And I was like, well, because I was the only teller and he was helping a client. And she's like, oh, okay, yeah, I just wanted to be sure. I was like, was it a cash transaction? And she's like, oh, yeah, I think, let me.
So they didn't even really know.
No, she's like, let me, here, I'll play the video again. Like, she wanted to play, like, more further than she had originally shown me. And then it starts loading and loading and loading. It was like a little spinning wheel. And she's like, oh, I'm having some technical difficulties. I was like, so do you know if he touched my drawer? Because he kind of did it behind me. I was facing the other way. And she's like, oh, no, I think he used the machine. Would he have used the machine? Are you hooked up to the machine? Because we have, like,
yeah,
an automated machine that kind of like an ATM machine. I just
don't understand why they haven't, like, looked any of this up before they decide to have this meeting with you.
Yeah, or,
like, they know nothing about it. They, I'm just not sure. What? How does this work? At a bank?
And I was, yeah, I got, like, really frustrated. I was like, well, what's the client's account number so I can look this up on my own? And she's like, okay, yeah, let me get that for you. And she's like, oh, actually, that's not working. I can give you his name. So she gives me the guy's name, and it's, like, a simple name. His last name's Ruben. That's all I'm going to say. She's like, it's blah, blah, Ruben. And I'm
that's
like,
too much information.
I'm like, okay, I guess I'll, like, look that up, and I'll message you if I find anything else. But I was like, he was just helping. You're watching the same video I'm watching. You've seen a lot more of it, and you're asking me questions about what happened after this, but you're the one that watched it. Right. I haven't.
Yeah.
And this was back in August.
Oh, boy.
And
as if you're supposed to remember that right. Fucking far back. It's 4 months ago? Yeah. 5 months ago.
A long time. So this is so weird, though. I go and I try to search it. There's not a single client by that name. And I'm like, whatever. An hour later, the client comes in. He has not been in our bank since August. He came in that very day today to make a deposit. And his last name is spelled R-U-B-I-N, Ruben, which I've never heard of, which is why I couldn't. She couldn't even tell me how to spell the client's
right,
name.
Yeah.
Like if you were like, yeah, you know, his Smith, but instead of it was with a Y, it's you would tell why. Someone that. Come on. I was like, you really had me stressed out about that bullshit.
Wow. What a small world. And then he just walked through the door. And you're like, hey, we're investigating in a transaction that you did back in August.
Yeah.
So fun.
Isn't that weird how that works?
Yeah. It's kind of fun. It's kind of like, not really, but like, kind of. Whenever I'm out of stock of something for like a really, really, really long time, every single time, without fail, when a customer asks me, where is this item? It's been out of stock for a really long time. And I tell them, oh, it's just like a long-term out from the warehouse. Like, the second they replenish it there, they'll ship it out. The next truck, it comes in. Every single time. Every time.
And does it sit it's on your shelf?
It's a curse. What?
Does it sit on your shelf?
No, it sells. But that's not the point. It's
yeah, like, it's going to be a while.
It's a coincidence. A quinky dink.
It's weird. And weird. Then I'm always like, is this a sign?
Well, and then it's just like, it always looks bad because yeah. I'm like, it's been out for like 8 weeks. I'm really sorry. And then the next truck it comes in, they just look at me like,
did you just forget?
You just didn't order it.
Yeah.
I did. I promise.
All right. So I am ready for your story. But good, first.
Because it's a long one. I might need a new bevy.
First, I have to turn off the lights and set the mood.
Okay. Good God. It's very dark in here.
And oh, then I'll yeah, get so much
a candle
on my eyes
and a beer. Okie dokie.
Tamara, what's your husband's favorite football team?
Not American football.
Shit. Liverpool.
Yeah, girl. So this story involves them.
Is he going to want to listen to this? Does he know this story?
I would hope so. If he's a true Liverpool fan, he knows this story. Calling him out right now.
He does not listen.
Okay, that's fine. Should we talk I tell a lot of shit about listen? Him anyway. Yeah. I don't know. You can if you want. Doesn't matter. Does not bother me.
Did I talk shit about him in this episode?
No.
Okay.
Although I did say he probably wouldn't push you around in a wheelchair.
Only one way to find
which
out.
Which is true. Okay, so... So, wow.
these words are really small. Okay. So what was supposed to be an exciting FA Cup final. I already fucked it up. Can I start that over?
Yes.
Rewind. I don't want soccer fans to come at me, specifically my husband.
There is a Tottenham Hotspurs flag outside of your house.
There sure is. And they also come up in the store.
And everywhere.
We are in a room surrounded by Tottenham stuff.
Nerds.
Okay. So what was supposed to be an exciting FA Cup semifinal between Liverpool and Nottingham Forest turned into the deadliest sports tragedy in UK history and left 97 fans dead. I have to go heavy. I always do.
Okay.
But then I promise my next story will be a little bit lighter because I feel like I've been doing a lot of heavy stuff.
I can't believe I've never heard of this.
I know, right? Today, I'm going to tell you all about the Hillsborough disaster. And you probably have heard of it because I think My Favorite Murder did an episode on it like a bajillion years ago.
That's a whole different Tamara.
So it was a very long time ago. Yeah. Early days. So before we get into the nitty gritty, I think I need to kind of set the stage a little bit and talk about the stadium where this all takes place. So the FA Cup final was being held at the Hillsborough Stadium as a neutral venue. And it's normally home to the Sheffield Wednesday Football Club. And at the time, it could hold a capacity of 54,000 fans.
Okay.
Word. So it was like a lot of like soccer teams in the UK. These stadiums are like built like neighborhoods are built around the stadiums. Mm-hmm. Like they're in very residential areas. It's actually like super cute. And it's an older stadium. And it had been semi-updated in 1966 for the World Cup, but it still had its flaws. So at the time, the only entrance or exit for, you know, for the Liverpool fans for this particular game mm-hmm. was at Leppings Lane, which is a narrow two-way road and quickly becomes a bottleneck situation with all the fans converging on one spot in a short period of time. So you walk in from Leppings Lane through some gates, then through turnstiles where your tickets are taken, and then you can enter the stadium and walk down through tunnels for standing room closer to the field, or you can find a seat on the upper levels of the stadium. And then I think for the most part, the stadium fans are separated pretty strictly to prevent hooliganism, which is like a big thing with football in the UK.
Yeah. Like I'm scared to go. Rich has scared me.
Why? Because of the hooliganism?
Yeah, just the violence and...
Yeah, they're serious about their teams.
Yeah.
Like, there's some, like, even there's even some bars here that, like, we'll go to that are, like, you know, Tottenham. They're Tottenham bars. If you walk in there with any other jersey, you know, you will not be welcome.
It's scary.
So, yeah, like, you... Basically, the entrances for these teams are on two opposite ends of the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even like the entryways into like the tunnels and the stands and stuff like that, they keep them completely separated just to avoid any of the shenanigans. I just love the word hooliganism.
And hooligans. And shenanigans.
I just love it. Okay. So you remember those flaws that I mentioned earlier?
Mm-hmm.
So these flaws would first become apparent in 1981. When Hillsborough Stadium was chosen as the venue for the FA Cup semi-final between the Tottenham Hotspurs and the Wolverhampton Wanderers. So in a nutshell, what happened was that too many fans were allowed into the standing area despite being over capacity, and a human crush occurred, resulting in 38 people being hospitalized for broken ribs, arms, and legs. But thankfully, there were no fatalities.
Ugh, fatalities. That scares me. Those crowds where you're like deep in the middle of a crowd and you don't even know. Like if something were to happen.
It's fucking scary. Like I had so much like anxiety, like just like digging into this. And there's pictures online, a lot of them, of just, we'll talk about it later. So the reason that no one died in this instance was because officials actually allowed fans to start spilling onto the pitch where they just like sat cross-legged right behind the goal. if they hadn't done that, people would have actually died. And the game just kept going. There was no pause, no interruption, even though people were literally being crushed. I mean, like, there's footage of the game being played live on YouTube, and you can just watch the commentators just like, oh yeah, there's something going on. Oh, I see a stretcher going that way. Oh, somebody shoots a goal, blah, blah, blah. And just like the game carries on, and you just see more and more people start to, you know, climb their way behind the goal.
Oh, that's bad taste.
I'm like, you couldn't pause just to, no, okay, fine. I guess it's an important game, but okay. So after this debacle, police recommended that the club reduce its capacity for the safety of the fans. Like, pretty, you know, that's obvious. A good ask. The club was like, nah. And the Sheffield Wednesday chairman actually told press in a post-match interview, quote, bollocks, no one would have been killed. Unquote.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. And they instead decided to update the standing areas. So standing pens or standing areas were like open concrete steps that span the sides of the stadium. And if there was ever too much congestion in the area, you had the freedom to move sideways as needed to spread out and like find your own space. So after the Spurs Wanderers match, the club, thinking that they were doing a good thing, they actually divided the big standing areas into five pens to prevent sideways movement, thinking that once it's full, people would be forced to just go into a different pen. Thus,
but they trapped them like in a cage, it sounds like.
Yeah. Oh. Well, and like each of these pens, they all have like different tunnel entrances. Okay, so they also removed the crush barriers at the entrance of the tunnels to improve the flow of the fans, which means more people can enter these standing pens all at one time. So all of these changes invalidated the stadium safety certificate, and it wasn't renewed. And because of this, Hillsborough Stadium wouldn't be chosen to host another FA Cup for another 6 years, where in 1987... overcrowding and safety concerns were observed at two different matches, one being between Coventry City and Leeds United. A Leeds fan described disorganization at the turnstiles with no steward or police direction inside the stadium, resulting in the crowd in one enclosure becoming so compressed he was at times unable to raise and clap his hands. Sorry, you're going to have to edit that out, but like... that just gives me the fucking chills. Ugh. I hate it so much. I don't even like being wrapped in my blanket too tight.
I know.
Okay. So other accounts do not Google these pictures yet.
No, I'm Googling pictures of the pins.
Okay. Yeah, Google like UK standing pins or something. So... other accounts told of fans having to be pulled from safety from the upper levels. So,
like, people had to reach over and pull them up?
Yeah, basically. Or they had to, like, fucking climb chain link fences to get up.
Oh, these are literally, like, giant cages.
They're human cages. Up until the Liverpool-Nottingham match, the South Yorkshire police were being led by Chief Superintendent Brian Mole. He was, by all accounts, an excellent leader and had years of experience not only in policing the area, but also in policing football games. It's like a big deal. Like, it's not just like I'm just doing patrol. You got to know how to deal with sports fans. It's just different. Mm-hmm. You got to know how to interact with them. You got to know how to observe and monitor the crowds. You got to know how to communicate effectively with every officer there at all times. And he knew exactly what he was doing. So about 6 months before the game, there was a young, like, newish officer, and he was the victim of a hazing incident that just went too far. He was held up in a fake robbery situation. His hands were cuffed, and he was stripped and photographed by fellow officers. This was a huge scandal for the department and led to four officers resigning and seven either being fined, demoted, or transferred. And even though the chief superintendent, Brian Mole, had nothing to do with the incident, there
They were still officers under his command. So he was transferred out of South Yorkshire for career development.
I don't get hazing. When it,
I don't either. It's
why really did you need
juvenile?
Why did you need to strip him? What's happening? And then
they took pictures of him. Like, okay. So 21 days before the match, he was replaced with this dude, David Duckenfield, who had sounds no... Like a... He sounds like a turd.
Yeah. Duckenfield.
He had no experience in Sheffield. He had no experience and had to police a football match. And it was said basically by everyone that he was a numbers guy, not a sports guy, which just tells you something right there. Nerd. So... The morning of the match, April 15th, 1989, police hold a meeting at the stadium to basically just go over all the expectations, you know, how to arrest someone, how to monitor the crowd for hooliganism, you know, drunk people, rule breakers, yada, yada, yada. So senior officers claimed to have covered, quote, every eventuality, unquote.
On the day of the match?
Yeah.
Okay.
They basically went over, you know, the safety book, which... had no mention of crowd safety in it whatsoever.
Also, but it's like, here's all this every information. Eventuality. All this information. Remember it all. There's going to be a lot of emergencies.
Yeah.
You better know what to
do. I mean, like, some of the police that were there, like, they've policed football games before. Mm-hmm. But, again, like, they just had this huge scandal where they have this big change in leadership. And, you know, they got new officers there. And they're... These officers, the senior officers, are looking at hooliganism as our biggest enemy. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not thinking about, you know, actual crowd safety. They're just thinking, we don't want any drunk turds to ruin the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's not great. So, the fans started, this is where it's going to start rolling downhill. Okay. So the fans start arriving at the stadium in a slow trickle around 2 o'clock, with kickoff being at 3. By 2:15, there's already congestion outside the stadium, and some fans even make the observation that there's little to no police presence or organization.
Great.
Around this time, a few of the officers policing the turnstiles, they go to detain someone who's trying to sneak in without a ticket. And in the few minutes that they were away from their post, all hell breaks loose. It was pretty apparent that there was no way to get the amount of people through the turnstiles safely before kickoff. Like, they just got swamped by all of these people who just got in at the same exact time. They even questioned whether or not to delay kickoff, but they ended up getting turned down for that. So police start physically forcing fans through the turnstiles to try to relieve pressure, with some officers not even bothering to check tickets just because they needed to get people moving through the gates. 20 minutes before kickoff, police are significantly outnumbered and frantic, and they're scared. They know something's going to happen. Like, and they're not hearing anything from their office, like their leaders, you know. So they're trying to get some kind of guidance from the control tower, where David Duckenfield has a clear eye on not only the standing pens, like the control tower is just above those pens, but it also has a whole bunch of monitors that show all the entrances. It's the control tower. He's got an eyes on everything that's going on, and he is supposed to be, you know, you guys need to be here. You guys need to be here. He's got to be controlling these people, because what else are officers but order takers? You know, they're following orders. So,
and they can't get a hold of him at all?
It's just radio silence. He's seeing it all happen. He's not giving any orders. Finally, an officer outside reaches the control tower and begs them to open another gate, or people are going to start getting killed outside the stadium. Duckenfield gives the order, open gate C, to relieve some of the pressure on the turnstiles. So now, instead of people going through like one at a time, they've opened this big gate at the side, and thousands of people pour in all at the same time. These fans are unushered, and they just head for the first tunnel that they see, which is tunnels to pens 3 and 4. which are already overcrowded at this time. Like, they should have already been closed off.
Oh, jeez.
So while those pens are already filled up, the surrounding pens still have plenty of room. And even, like, on live TV, an observation is made by the BBC commentator. And he's just like, oh, yeah, like, you know, I'm seeing a lot of congestion over here in these pens. But if you look over there, I can still see the ground. I can still see the concrete. Like, there's nobody over there. I wonder when they're going to start directing people over there.
It's wild. The commentator is doing a better job.
Yeah. So, yeah, no one gives the order to close down the entrance tunnels for pens 3 and 4, which is normally what they would do when the pens reach capacity. So, still outside, more and more fans are pushing forward, trying to get into the stadium before kickoff. At first, fans who are already in those pens are thinking, like, wow, this is really uncomfortable. But, like, those who've been to football games in the past know, especially with sold-out games like this, it does get cramped, but it always lets up. Like, one guy, he was just like, wow, I've never been to a game this packed before, but I've been to games that were really busy and, like, you know, it gets tight, but it lets up. Like, it comes and goes in waves, you know, like, it depends on gameplay too. Like, it'll let up when the game calms down. And then when there's a goal, like, you'll feel tight again and stuff like that. So, yeah, this whole coming and going thing, it didn't happen. It just kept on. None of them realize that fans closest to the field are already being crushed. Another request to delay kickoff by 20 minutes to get fans safely into the stadium is denied, and the game begins. Ugh. So at approximately 3:04, it's when shit hits the fan. A shot is made. It's actually kind of wild to watch it happen, too. A shot is made at the goal by Liverpool, and it hits the bar, creating a surge of excitement within the crowd where everyone fucking pushes forward and gets crazy. This crowd surge forces fans in Pen 3 into their crush barriers. So, like, you know, you're in this fucking standing pin, and then in between the steps, like, on the steps are these metal bars that are supposed to, like, hold you in place from going forward. But there were
down the steps.
Right, but there were so many people there. Those fucking bars weren't going to hold anybody in place. And they actually smashed the bars. The metal bars came out of the concrete.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it just snaps from the pressure. At this point, many people up front are in serious distress. Many can't breathe and begin passing out. The whole time, police are watching from the other side of the fence on the pitch as they realize what's happening. And they're still not getting any orders from the control tower. Fans that are actually able to move are trying to climb up the fence to escape from being crushed, and police are yelling at them to get down from the fence. Like, quit it, hooligans!
That's why you always teach your kids that sometimes you don't listen to authority.
Absolutely not. And they didn't. So finally, one of the officers on the pitch gets the attention of the referee, and he pauses the game just 6 minutes into the match. Fans are begging and screaming at officials to open the gate to let them onto the pitch. But even with one gate open, it's not enough to relieve the pressure fast enough. People on the upper levels are trying to lift fans to safety while officers start to tear down the chain link fence between the pen and the pitch. Once they start pulling people out is when they realize the gravity of the situation. They can see the dead fans right there at the front of the fence line. I mean, like, their faces are deep purple, and their tongues were so swollen that rescuers couldn't perform CPR on them. A few officers continue pulling survivors out of the mass of bodies. And there's, like, CCTV footage of all of this, and you can see the crowd inside the pen writhing, and then there's a huge section at the front that's not. And those are all just bodies. It's horrifying. And then there's also, like, pictures that reporters took from the front of the fence where you can see these people's faces smashed against the chain link. And I mean, like, the chain link is dug so deep into their skin. It's horrifying.
Oh, my God.
I gotta stop looking at these pictures. I just have such morbid curiosity. I just can't stop myself. And then I spend 2 hours looking at these pictures and I'm like,
Oh my god.
Can't yeah, when I just when I googled the you pins, see
some of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to stop.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's very heavy. At this point, this one dude, Graham Kelly, he's the Football Association official. He pays a visit to the control box to see what is up. And right off the bat, David fucking Duckenfield lays out the first lie of many. So he tells him that he didn't order the officers to open gate C. The Liverpool fans were being hooligans. They were drunk. They were violent. And they smashed the gate open on their own. And they stormed the place. That's why this happened. Shockingly, an order finally comes from the control box. That order is to have police, instead of lining up, you know, instead of helping rescue people, the order is to have police line up across the pitch, separating the Nottingham Forest side from the Liverpool side, just in case the Nottingham fans think that the frenzy is hooliganism. So basically, they thought that the Nottingham fans were going to storm the pitch to fight Liverpool fans. Because they thought that that's what this was. How fucking stupid is this?
It doesn't even make sense.
So they just formed a barrier with their officer bodies. Because they basically were just like, oh, this is Liverpool's fault. They're drunk. They're violent. They're going to start fights. So, you know, let's protect against the violence and just keep these two teams separate. Because that's the problem here.
Was there any, like, were they seeing this happen? Or were they just like,
Who? The Nottingham fans?
No, the officers and whoever commanded them to do that. Were they like, oh, this is happening.
The officers are seeing it. So some of the officers help, but most of the officers line up because they're following their orders. Yeah. It's really sad.
But was there like whoever told them to do that up in the control tower?
David Duckenfield.
Did he actually see that they were wanting to fight? Or
No. He didn't want to get blamed for this crush happening because he was the one that ordered gate C open.
Right.
Even though they didn't close off the tunnels to pens 3 and 4. So he allowed thousands of people to storm the gates, essentially, and then blamed it on Liverpool fans.
Okay.
That's what happened. But now this person is asking him questions like, why did you open this gate? People are dying. And he's like, oh, it's the Liverpool fans. They did it. They're drunk.
So then he pulls the officers, tells them to line up.
He keeps feeding into the lie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Even though they can see what's going on and see that this is actually not what's happening.
Some officers, I think, are like breaking protocol and they're trying to help. But most of the rescuers of the day actually ended up being the Liverpool fans. Yeah, like the ones that could move were getting anybody uninjured was trying to pull out as many people as they could.
Yeah.
So
the Liverpool fans could see what was going on and they knew absolutely. It wasn't. Okay.
Yeah. They were fucking enraged because then after this, for years, people are looking at them like you were the cause of almost 100 people dying. Mm-hmm. Oh, did you really do this and that? Like, there were so many rumors going around. We'll get into it. It's all just horrible this, like, how much this guy ruined like the reputation of Liverpool and their fans. Yeah. David fucking Duckenfield. Not a cool dude. Okay, let me find my spot. So, rescuers ended up being Liverpool fans, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so yeah, those that were uninjured were trying to help as many people as possible. They were even starting, they ran out of stretchers like almost immediately because the ambulances couldn't get in fast enough. So they started tearing like advertisement billboards off of the walls of the stadium to try and just like use as makeshift stretchers. They were the real heroes of the day.
And is the game still going on?
Or no. They've canceled the game at this point. Okay. The game only played for 6 minutes, and that is it.
Okay.
Yeah. It was like 5 minutes, 30 seconds when that when the soccer ball hits the bar, and then it's like done. Okay. Thankfully, they actually stopped the game. So, so because no emergency was declared by officials, because they were still blaming it on Liverpool fans, and there was no emergency response plan in place because they, quote unquote, prepared for every eventuality, many more lives would be lost. Dozens and dozens of ambulances began arriving at Leppings Lane, which is, again, a narrow two-way road. They would park their ambulance. Some would take their keys with them and run in to see what's going on if they could save anybody, essentially blocking roadways, creating a huge clusterfuck where even if someone actually was able to be get to the ambulance, getting out was a whole nother challenge. So 42 ambulances in total arrived. Only one ever made it onto the pitch. The rest were like outside in that big clusterfuck. And somehow they coordinated. They were able to get 149 of the injured to local hospitals, where 12 were pronounced dead there. Those are just the people that made it to the hospital. But then there were still, of course, the bodies at the stadium that were already clearly dead. So by the end of the day, there were 93 dead, the youngest being just 10 years old.
Oh my God.
Most of these were like between, I would say most of these were between like teens and mid 20s. Yeah. Young kids. Oh, just going out to go watch a soccer game.
Imagine how scared you would be. Oh, I don't my even, God. I can't go there. It just breaks my heart.
I can't do it. So, yeah, on top of the dead, there were also over 700 fans injured. Within 2 days, two more would succumb to their injuries. The 96th victim would die in 1993 after the 22-year-old's life support was withdrawn. And then the 97th victim... sorry, this one chokes me up. They fucking held on until 2021, where they were in a vegetative state since the crush. And like right before they passed, there was like eye movement or something to show that they were like responding to something. And then they passed not long after that. Fucking 2021.
Did they take them off of life support because of...
I'm not 100% sure, but that is what I read. It was very sad. So it gets sadder. Okay. Back at the stadium, all the remaining bodies are lined up in the gymnasium and photographed.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This might be too heavy of a story. Family and friends that are looking for their loved ones.
Hold on. Is this field still there?
Mm-hmm. We'll get to the upgrades.
I mean, but still, like...
It's wild. I'm and there's, just, like, a lot of memorials
in this area
and stuff
where they had all these dead bodies.
Yeah, whenever you watch a Sheffield Wednesday game, that's where it is.
Oh, I don't watch any games, I promise.
I don't watch Sheffield Wednesday games, but I just watch whatever my husband has on the TV. And I couldn't imagine this either. Like, there were families whose, like, you know, their sons... like went to a soccer game and they were like, oh, did you hear what happened in Sheffield? And they're just like, no. Oh, there's something bad happened. There were a million ambulances stuck outside, blah, blah, blah. And all these families are freaking the fuck out. God, I couldn't imagine. So anybody that was looking for their loved ones were directed to wait at a boys club next to the Sheffield police station. Around 2 a.m., police start rounding up families and they shuttle them to the stadium where they're brought into a room one by one. In the room is a display of all the photos taken of the deceased. They were told to look through the photos and see if they can recognize someone. Some couldn't even identify their family members because their faces were so black and blue. And if they do recognize one of the photos, they're then taken into another room where that person would be brought in on a gurney to be officially identified. The coroner, Dr. Stephen Popper, who reminds me a lot of Kevin from The Office. That is what he looks like. He's a fucking doofus. He like walks around with a stupid fucking grin on his face all the time. He's such a douche. He visits the gym alongside the country's lead pathologist to begin their investigation into the cause of death. So he talks to Duckenfield. And Duckenfield starts filling his head with all the drunkenness and the rebel rousing and blah, 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 the hooliganism. And this automatically, you know, sways his opinion of these victims.
Mm-hmm.
In this unprecedented act of stupidity, he orders the blood alcohol to be tested on every single victim, including the children. Yeah.
Okay.
And like this shit gets out to the media. So that's already painting a picture. The families start being questioned about how much their deceased loved ones drank. And it's becoming clear that officials are just, they're going down one road. Officials begin feeding lies to the media about the drunk, violent Liverpool fans, the rampant hooliganism. Some of the stories even went so far as to claim that a Liver fan urinated on a police officer as he was giving CPR to someone, and that another Liverpool fan was seen pickpocketing the dead. Yeah. All of this being fed from the police. Fortunately, none of these things actually happened. So within 48 hours of the disaster, the government appoints Lord Justice Taylor to head an inquiry into who or what was responsible for the tragedy. They begin by interviewing officers who were there, many of whom claim that they were wildly undermanned and they had little to no way of communicating with fellow officers. In total, 3,776 witness statements were taken. The turnstiles were then looked into by investigators who were just crunching the numbers. What was pretty crazy was that while Liverpool supporters were allocated over 44% of the stadium's capacity, they were only allocated 20% of the available entrances, which included just 7 turnstiles at the Leppings Lane end for the 10,100 supporters to get through.
Oh, I'm sorry. How many?
Turnstiles? 7.
Okay.
For 10,000 fans to get through in a 1 hour span of time when most of them came 30 minutes prior to the game.
This feels like there's a lot of men involved in these decisions.
There actually are. So after doing the math, that's 1,443 supporters for each turnstile. And at the rate that they were coming through, they would have needed to postpone the game by 40 minutes at the minimum to get everyone through safely. The investigators also looked at the rush of people that entered through Gate C. They checked headcount versus the amount of ticket holders, and the math checked out there. For the most part, these were all ticketed fans that came through, not drunken hooligans sneaking into the game, as fucking Duckface put it. All of these findings were made public in August of 1989, and the actions of police are severely criticized. David Duckenfield is suspended for his failure to take control of the situation, his inability to monitor the crowd, his lack of effective leadership, and the crushing not being immediately recognized. Mind you, he is suspended with pay. That's a way to get out of work. Liverpool fans and families of the victims are redeemed when the truth of the story's manipulation comes out. A year later, in August of 1990, however, the families are dealt another blow when the director of public prosecutions decides that there won't be any charges filed against anyone due to insufficient evidence. Mm-hmm. So, oh my God. Yeah. On top of that, Dr. Stephen Popper, the coroner slash doofus, was being heavily influenced by corrupt police officials and finally ended the cause of death inquest, which is the longest running coroner's inquest in English legal history. Firstly, he concludes that anyone who died after 3:15 p.m. on the day of, which is, you know, that's just around the time that they were even able to start pulling people out. those deaths would not be taken into consideration at all. and that the cause of death for everyone else was merely an accident. The families are devastated, and it looks like there will be no justice for their loved ones who died just trying to watch their favorite team play. I promise I'm going to wrap it up soon. I know it's getting real dark. It does. We get redeemed in the end. Kind of. In 1996, a few officers struggling with their mental health, they come forward and admit that their statements were sanitized. Their original statements make their way to Phil Scranton, who is the MVP of this story. He's a critical criminologist, an academic, and an author, and he begins to dive into, you know, the cover-up. In October of 1998, he gains access to the Parliamentary Archives Room, where all the statements pertaining to the Hillsborough disaster are housed, whichever one of those works.
Housed, I think.
So within the boxes and boxes of paperwork is hundreds and hundreds of statements from officers that were on the grounds that day. And there was the original written statement. Then there was a typed version with edits made and like shit crossed out and cleaned up, like verbiage and stuff like that. And then there was a final version that was 100% perfect and ready for like the public to see, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing bad that the police did at all. So right off the bat, Phil Scranton sees this insane corruption of evidence, and he writes a book within a matter of weeks and gets it out into the public. Papers pick up the story, but really not much comes out of it, unfortunately, not until later at least. Families just keep getting let down by their government over and over. And in 2009, the stadium holds a memorial for the 20th anniversary of the disaster. Politician Andy Burnham starts making a speech about, you know, the pain of loss and remembering those that have passed. But then he mentions to the crowd that he's there on behalf of the prime minister and the government. And the crowd loudly boos him. Mm-hmm. And then it's like so beautiful. Like he just shuts the fuck up and he just lets this crowd like sing. Like they start chanting justice for the victims. And he just stands there and he takes it. And like it's at that point that the case shifts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So in January of 2010... the Hillsborough Independent Panel was established by the government to oversee the release of the documents. Phil Scranton was invited to be a part of the 9-member panel and the lead author of the report. The families, honestly, like being let down over and over again, they didn't think anything was even going to come of this because, you know, what's another, why are we getting our hopes up again?
Yeah, plus it has been so many years.
It's been 20 years, yeah. So... but this report coming out was a bombshell. It was a 395-page report. It delivered 153 key findings that were never like discussed before. The documents proved that there were multiple factors that led to the deaths and that the fans were not the cause of the disaster. In total, 300,000. Big numbers are hard. 335,000 pages were released online, including the alterations made by the police. Put that shit out in the public.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So everybody can see the things that they crossed out and wrote in. Motherfuckers. So in December of 2012, the original verdicts of the cause of deaths were overturned by the High Court. And after new coroner's inquest in 2014, the cause of deaths were listed as unlawfully killed, with fan behavior not being a contributing factor to the tragedies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was a huge deal for the families. Like, they were just being blamed for all of this. Like, your son, who was 16 years old, died because he was a drunken fool. Like, that's horrible to just, ugh. In 2019, Duckenfield was charged with 95 counts of manslaughter after he admitted that he lied about the fans' involvement in the disaster. He also admitted that his failure to close off the main tunnel to the central pens were the direct cause of the deadly crush. However, the jury couldn't come to a conclusion and called a mistrial. In his second trial, it ended with a not guilty verdict. which is fucked. As of right now, the only person to have been convicted of anything was the stadium safety officer for not providing enough turnstiles for the game. He was found guilty and fined. I know. It's probably fine. Just some poor person who just works at the stadium that's like, I don't know, this is probably enough. Like, it just made me really sad.
What about whoever appointed this duck field dude?
Yeah, no. Nobody was held accountable for this. Nobody. So the Hillsborough disaster ushered in a new era of upgraded stadiums in the, you know, in the UK. And as of 1994, standing pens have been banned throughout the English Premier League. Although my husband did inform me that non-league football still has standing pens, but they're at a much smaller scale than Premier League. So that's fine. I think they have a much smaller fan base.
Yeah.
Less of an instance of crushing. So, you know, thanks for listening. And I hope that everyone feels as claustrophobic as I do forever and ever and ever. And there's a documentary on ESPN that I used heavily for this. And then, like, all my other links will be in the show notes. But y'all should watch that documentary. It's called Hillsborough. It's fucking wild. And if you're morbid like me, you could Google the Hillsborough disaster and see what comes up. It's not pretty.
Maybe.
But that's my dark, horrifying story. I'm really sorry.
Maybe Rich will actually watch that with me.
Oh, it's really good. I didn't, like, Matt had just put it on, and I was just like, what? This happened? It's fucking wild.
It's very sad to me that, like, the stadium is still,
it's still there.
Used when it was so tragic. Like, you know when there's, like,
well,
houses and, like, buildings that are, like, torn down because tragic things happen?
But, like, how are they going to tear this down? I'm going to pull up this stadium and show you what I mean by it is built into a residential neighborhood. There are literally some, like, English Premier League teams that you have to enter the stadium through someone's home. Like, I'm not even joking. I think it's actually a team that got entered in to the Premier League, like, either this year or last year. Matt was telling me about it. Hillsborough Stadium. Satellite view. Yeah, so, like, ooh, get off my screen. All of those things around there are houses. There's just houses. How can you tear that down?
I don't know. Build a new one?
I mean, they've updated since. Let's hope that they've, you know, updated it properly. Because it seems like the semi-upgrade that they got after the World Cup just wasn't enough.
I just can't imagine, like, the team in the locker room, like, trying to get hyped up for a game, and this is, like, where they lined up all the dead bodies.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you just gotta, I don't know. You just gotta put it, you know, you remember them, but you play for them. And here's a cute fun fact. On the Liverpool crest, which I'm sure that Rich has hanging somewhere in his house.
There's so many places, I'm sure.
There's flames on the side of the crest. That was actually added after the Hillsborough disaster to commemorate the families.
Why flames?
Flames. Maybe they're not flames. But there's something on the side of the crest. I was going to put it in there and then I was like, meh. I'm sure Rich knows.
Yes, he'll be so happy that you covered this and so disappointed in me.
Why would he be disappointed in you?
That I didn't do it. Although I've asked him so many times for idea topics.
Oh my God, Matt sends me ideas all the time and I'm just like, I can't do this. This is a missing person and they've never been found and it stresses me out. It's like always a missing person and I just can't.
Flames. There are flames. There's like two torches on the side.
Yeah. Okay. So those were added after the Hillsborough disaster. Okay. That's what Google said. Don't come after me if that's not right. But I'm done. And now you get to tell your story next week.
It's a good one.
I'm excited.
It's not even sad like yours.
I think, yeah, because so the week before I did Om Shinrikyo, which was also 100 people dying. So I think I need to just chill the fuck out.
A little bit.
Sorry. I just can't. There's these like big things that happened in history and like they're just like.
You're like, I have to do it.
Nobody fucking has ever heard of Om Shinrikyo. I have talked to so many people about it. Nobody's ever heard of it.
Except for
nobody's
my sister.
Ever heard of. Yeah. Nobody's ever heard of this whole Hillsborough disaster. It's fucking wild. This isn't even the worst one. When I was Googling other human crush events. A lot of soccer games, people. Y'all need to chill out.
So I'm looking up the song that they sang, Liverpool.
The You Never Walk Alone?
Yeah.
Are we going to play out on and, that song? Can we do that without being sued?
I don't know. It's a nice song.
It's fine.
And I asked Rich if we could dance to that as our first dance because you know you'll never walk alone, like, yeah. You know, you're together now, and I'd never understood why he didn't want to do it, but it says the tune and its message of support, unity, and camaraderie are an emotional symbol of the club and its history. It became even more embedded with the fabric of Liverpool's history after the Hillsborough disaster of 1989, and it's also a reminder of those who perished in the tragedy. Yeah.
That's very sad.
Mm-hmm. And that's from sportingnews.com.
It's sad it took this long for the families to get any form of redemption, but
that's a long time, but
they got something. And I'm so glad that all of it is on video.
Right.
From the original games to that fucking politician crying while he was making his speech. And yeah. I love the interhighway.
You're a nerd.
It's from Scrubs, Tamara. Get with it.
Okay.
All right. Well, since we can't play that song because we'll probably get sued, I'm going to sing.
You can sing it.
I'm going to. I don't know the song. And that's fine.
I have the lyrics.
I'm going to sing a song that's near and dear to my heart.
Ooh, is it The Little Mermaid?
No. It's. Oh, now I don't remember how it starts. Let's go to the mall. Let's go to the mall, everybody.
What was her
everybody
name, Robin?
Everybody come and play. Throw every last care away. Let's go to the mall. Sing it, Tamara. Today.
I have not watched that show in so long.
We're doing a rewatch.
Who's we? You and your dogs?
Yeah. Well, right now, but me and Matt.
Oh, wow. Your husband watches TV with you?
Some shows. He won't watch anything new, but we'll rewatch. So, you know, we'll rewatch Cougar Town. We'll rewatch Scrubs.
He watches Cougar Town with you?
Oh, we go to sleep to Cougar Town every night. He loves Cougar Town.
Richard.
All right. I can't keep singing. Let's go to the mall.
What was her name? Robin Sparkle?
Robin Scherbatsky. Oh, yeah. Robin Sparkle. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, rate, review, subscribe.
Send tell someone. Any stories and shit. Oh, no. Go ahead, please.
Tell someone about our show.
Or not. You know, you do you.
Send your emails to
fearfulfriendspodcast@gmail.com.
All right. Bye, friends.
Bye.